Welcome to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ, folks. I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholz, a great follow to AJ Scholz 24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's pretty close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, and we're both excited because now really into the short strokes in terms of the regular season here concluding shortly. We want to take an updated look at the playoff races in each division, because at least in a couple of them, there's been some movement in the last couple of weeks, and it bears a discussion. AJ, how are you, buddy?
Doing good. Yeah, it's getting interesting, of course, as we go along here, starting with the Atlantic. Not a ton of change. Florida's still on top, but technically, with points, Florida and Boston are tied 97 points apiece, although Florida does have a game in hand. Your Leafs coming in at this point, I think a distant third, 89 points for them. So an 8-point gap, that'd be pretty hard for them to clear that gap. Not impossible, of course. And then they're 4 points up on the Lightning for that, that third spot there. No real win there for Toronto. At this point, you're either going to get Florida or Boston, depending on who wins the division. Or if you were to drop, likely would either be Florida or Boston or the Rangers based on the point total. So yeah, your Leafs kind of stuck with no good matchups available. But obviously for Florida and Boston, the reward could be either Washington or Detroit, maybe the Islanders, maybe the Devils. So there's still plenty to play for at the top of that division, on top of just a general division title, of course. But, I personally wouldn't put as much stock in that as potential matchups. So that's the Atlantic division. Paul, do you want to take us through the Metro?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on the Atlantic that I want to share. And I'm looking at the games at home remaining for these teams. Florida has played 34 home games, and Boston played 38. So in terms of the remainder of games, Boston's going to be on the road a lot, and Florida's at home. That could be a tilt in the favor of the Panthers to get the division title. And they do, as you mentioned, have a game in hand currently. So I favor them. 5 ahead in the win column 2 overall, which is potentially a tiebreaker. They talk about regulation wins. They got a 6-game lead over Boston, so the tie would go to them in that regard. I'm surprised at Tampa chugging along and closing the gap on the Maple Leafs. They are 7-1-2 in their last 10 games, while the Leafs are only 5-4-1, so that's up for grabs. And they do have a couple of games against each other down the stretch here, so this is not over yet for third and fourth. And Detroit's really faded badly, though, AJ. They're only 3-7 in their last 10 games, so it looks like the four teams that are going to go forward, we know who they are. And now we can go into the Metro Division, and we can discuss the fact that the Rangers and Carolina have separated themselves from the pack. And the Rangers have played 34 home games, while the Carolina Hurricanes have played 37. So an edge to the Rangers in that regard, too. I see the Rangers with a 7-3 record in the last 10. Carolina's been great, though, 8-1-1. So those two teams, clearly the cream of the crop in that division. I wonder who you give the nod to, AJ, if they were to go head-to-head, and certainly who do you think is going to win the division?
Yeah, I think, I think Carolina can definitely be in the mix there. The Rangers have, some really solid netminding. Not that Carolina doesn't. The addition of Jake Gensel has been phenomenal for Carolina. He's been really, really good for them, not surprisingly. So if I had to pick, I think I would go with the Hurricanes to win the Metro there. But again, the Rangers have a game in hand and a 1-point lead.
Right.
Again, Flyers distant third, trying to stave off the Washington Capitals, who have 2 games in hand on the Flyers. So, there's some stiff competition in the Metro there as well.
Yeah, and there's a gap down to the Islanders, only 4 points behind Washington, but Washington does have a game in hand, so they're hanging on by a thread, I'll say, on Long Island. And New Jersey's trying to stay relevant, but these teams have not posted winning records over the last 10 games, so I don't like their chances. And how about Ovechkin? All of a sudden, he has 26 goals, AJ, and so that's closing the gap on one Wayne Gretzky for the all-time record in goal scoring, and it's been a big part of Washington's rush toward a playoff spot, as they're 7-3 in their last 10 games. What say you about Ovi's chances now?
Well, I mean, I always thought he would get there eventually. The start of the season, the slow start there had, you know, maybe it was looking like maybe it wouldn't happen next year, that we would need a full season next year and then it would happen sometime in the year after that. But at this point, he's sitting, I think, about 46 to go here. That's 46 to tie. That's definitely a reachable total next year. And obviously, he can chip away at that this season as well. You know, without that slow start, I think he'd be a lock to get it next year. But I'm thinking next year is probably going to be the time for that to happen, especially if he can knock a few more off in the last few weeks of the season here.
So you're expecting him to continue at his more recent rate for a while. I think it's going to maybe take a little bit more than next year, but certainly the watch is on, and I think it's inevitable now that he will pass him and do it in a Washington jersey, which is pretty cool, staying with one team throughout his whole career to get it done. Let's switch over to the Western Conference, AJ, and why don't you lead us in a discussion of what is going on at the top of that division. Two teams have separated themselves a bit from the third, but three powerhouses there for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Last week we talked about Colorado, Dallas, and Winnipeg kind of being in a three-dog race, and that has really changed. The Jets are on a three-game losing streak. They're 5-5-0 in their last 10, so they've definitely hit a little bit of a hiccup here, and now they find themselves 4 points back of Colorado and Dallas, who are tied atop the standings. Colorado with a game in hand. They're on a 9-game winning streak. So they are doing everything they can. 9-1 over the last 10, but Dallas 8-2 over their last 10. And so this is going to be an absolute race to the finish here. And even, you know, whether you put stock in it or not, I actually tend to put the opposite stock. I'm not picking the team that wins the President's Trophy to win the league, because that hasn't happened in forever. But both those teams in contention, we'll talk about Vancouver and the Pacific. They're in there. The Rangers, Hurricanes, Florida, Boston. I mean, this has probably got to be the deepest president's race that I remember in recent history. I feel like usually there's one team maybe from each conference that's in there. But as far as the Central goes, I think it'll be Colorado, Dallas, Winnipeg, certainly not out of it with that 4-point trail there. And then, you know, playoff or wild card spots, where they're going to come from is always a good question. Nashville is certainly in the mix with 88 points. I think you're really looking at three teams here. It's a big drop in the Central from Nashville's 88 to the Blues 80. So I think you've got Nashville probably feeling relatively comfortable here, but there's two teams in the Pacific that could be in the mix there as well. Paul, any thoughts on the Central?
Well, you mentioned Nashville briefly. I think they deserve more of a talk because they are undefeated in an awfully long time, AJ. They're 8-0-2 in their last 10, and I think they have you can add five more games to that streak before that. So really a team that's on fire at the right time of year to close the gap on some of the other clubs. Who knows? They keep going like this. They might overtake the Jets the way the Jets are reeling a little bit right now. So that's an intriguing option to consider. But St. Louis certainly has fallen off the pace. Despite the fact they went 6-3-1, they lost ground to Nashville, and now they find themselves, as you said, 8 points behind, and they only have 10 games left. So Nashville with a game in hand, they're pretty comfortably in the wild card position and maybe with an upward mobility opportunity too. Finally, the Pacific Division. You mentioned, AJ, there's eight teams at the top of the overall standings. They're separated by a point. We haven't seen that ever in the race for President Trophy standings. And the Vancouver Canucks are the combatant from the Pacific that is part of that mix. They have a 10-point lead over Edmonton. The Oilers have vaulted into second place in this division over Los Angeles, so they would have home ice advantage in that possible matchup. Or if Vegas comes through and catches the Kings, we could get Edmonton and Vegas in the first round. But the Oilers had a tough trip through the province of Ontario over the weekend, losing games in Toronto and Ottawa that didn't help their cause, AJ, and they didn't look good doing it. So some of their old long-term concerns about defensive woes and some suspect goaltending, a little bit, I'll say, factored into both of those defeats and caused some wrinkled eyebrows among Oilers faithful to say, is this going to be another disappointment that they can't get to the promised land because of some of the long-time issues that this team has had on the defensive side of the puck? But Vegas certainly is holding the fort. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games on a 3-game win streak. Los Angeles on a 4-game win streak, the hottest of the four teams in this loop right now. Well, Vancouver 7-2-1, so let's throw them in there. But after that, it really falls off, and Calgary has 71 points, 14 behind Vegas. So again, I think we know the four teams that are going to make it from this loop. So each team, I think, each division rather, is going to produce one of the four wild cards, and I like that. So basically four teams making it from each group gives it a nice look overall. And we'll address this on an ongoing basis as we look forward to the finish line. But I don't think Edmonton is going to have enough time to catch Vancouver. So looks like Vancouver's home and cooled out in first place here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I think it's pretty much clearing up as far as, you know, who's in and who's out from that standpoint. But how they shake out is still yet to be determined.
And AJ, with that said, we're going to go into the nuts and bolts of our show, where we try to help people. We're now into the fantasy hockey playoff round, and I qualified in my big league and looking for a good week there. And I had an interesting decision to contemplate, because one of my defensemen, Alex Pietrangelo, has missed a few games for the Vegas Golden Knights, and I thought, I can't really go into this round with a guy that may not play this week. So I had to dump him, and I picked up Neil Pionk. I wonder if you agree with that strategy, or if you would have held on to Pietrangelo and tried to muddle your way through this particular round shorthanded. But I think you got to go in at full strength in the playoffs wherever you can, though, and that's what prompted my decision. And I know there's a lot of fantasy managers out there that may face similar tough decisions.
Yeah, I agree, Paul. I don't think you can, at this point in the season, you can't wait for a guy to get healthy. You know, it's that classic, you know, you're looking ahead to the next matchup by keeping him on your team instead of focusing on the now matchup. And you know, with less, you know, once teams get eliminated, it's certainly possible that you'll see, you know, that he'll be, maybe Pietrangelo is still available next week, right? Because if you're eliminated, why bother picking him up? So he might still be there. You could flip that decision and ahead of next week's matchup. But I absolutely agree. I think you need a full complement of guys heading into the rest of the week here.
So you've rubber stamped my move. I like that. I'm very happy to hear that. AJ, we want to take a look at the forwards that might be available out there to help if you're in a similar circumstance up front. And at the top of that list of possible players that could do the job for you, Justin Brazeau, part of the surging Bruins, he's factored in there to the tune of 4 goals and 1 assist on 11 shots and 5 hits last week. He's only owned 1% of leagues, but getting a good run for a team that is right at the top of the Atlantic Division right now. So something to consider there. Jonathan Drouin, similarly cast. We've talked about him before, AJ. Only owned in 20% of leagues out there, and he's playing a top 6 run with Colorado, playing with the big boys, and showing well with 2 goals and 5 helpers last week coming through. As I said, only owned in 20% of leagues and playing a primo role for one of the top teams out west. So you got to take a little bit of a look there. Why don't you take us through a few other names in the forward ranks, and then I'll take over from there.
Yeah, I've got a couple that I'm not sold on, especially if you're in the postseason here, guys that are showing up on this list, but I'd be cautious on that. One, Sonny Milano, 3 goals and 1 assist, looks to possibly be a game time call tonight, which would indicate maybe later in the week he'll be in the lineup, but it's just too much of a question mark when you're heading into playoffs in terms of fantasy. The other guy on this list, Tom Wilson, currently serving that suspension. So he's not going to be getting game time for the next couple here. He's not expected back until April 4th. So again, if you're in a playoff position, these aren't guys necessarily to look at, even though they're probably going to show very highly in, you know, your rankings of top available players based on their previous week of performance. One guy I do recommend is Bobby McMahon for Toronto, just 8% ownership. Yep. The thing I love here, again, we've talked about it all season long, is the dual position eligibility, 3 goals and 1 assist. Worse, the Leafs, it's just confirmed Mitch Marner will remain out of the lineup tonight. So Bobby McMahon, his value increases because we've got him set to play with Tavares and Nylander. Paul, I think you or I could potentially pick up an assist playing with Tavares and Nylander out there. So it's a good spot for him, good assignment. obviously the concern there, you know, maybe longer term is once Marner comes back, probably not going to be in that spot anymore for McMahon. But for the time being, Marner continues to be absent heading into at least tonight's game.
And we talked about the Philadelphia Flyers, AJ. They're going to be relevant down the stretch. So that means you got to take a look at Scott Laughton, a real good soldier for this club. He's underrated, in my opinion, in so many ways. Two-position eligibility, a factor for him as well. 14% ownership. This guy's just a solid citizen for the Flyers. And he chipped in with two goals and one helper on 14 shots, but added seven hits and seven blocks. This is a guy you want on your team in the postseason when it gets a little more rugged. And he can play any way you like, but he's got some good hands as well as the physicality that you need in the postseason run. There are some non-playoff teams that are producing players that could help you in the final weeks, and you might think they got nothing to play for, but they all want to pad their stats at this point. And a team like St. Louis is a bit of a scary opponent, AJ, because they have a lot of guys who have that Stanley Cup pedigree and a lot of skill up front, and Jake Neighbors is one of those guys. Three goals and one helper last week, 24% ownership, 10 shots and 11 hits, so good numbers across the board for him. And he's got a top six opportunity there. Dylan Strome has been part of the surging capital story for weeks. And he's 38% owned, AJ, playing about 19 minutes a game, one goal and six helpers last week. This guy has been a skill player ever since he was in junior. And it's good to see him getting a nice run in Washington now and locked in as a top six center as well. So that's a good spot for him to be in. And veteran in Dallas, they're getting a lot of mileage out of Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn. Jamie Benn, for his part, 73% owned, and he gets on this list in the sixth slot. Four goals on the week last week, and he did it economically, but only eight shots, so he's got a shooting eye revving up right now, and the serious shooting's about to start. A tough hombre as well, so the rugged players are the guys that I like. You know that, AJ, and this is a guy that's firing on all cylinders right now.
Well, I'll take us into the defensemen, and not to continue stealing your Maple Leafs thunder here, but Timothy Liljegren is at the top of our list here. 20% owned, three assists in the last week, including one with the man advantage. The thing I like here is he has been getting a continued look on that top power play unit with Toronto. Again, that has him playing with Tavares, Nylander, Matthews, and Max Domi. Also interesting is that he's going to get, I think, some more opportunities here. Some injury news coming out of Toronto. Morgan Riley is questionable to play tonight. Joel Edmondson is going to be out of the lineup at least for the week. So they'll have to rely on guys like Liljegren even more. Simone Benoit and Connor Timmins come into the lineup if Riley is out for sure. So some interesting changes there, but I think that only increases Liljegren's value, especially playing up with that first power play unit. So he's kind of the number one guy for me on this list. You can add, you know, Braden McNabb. We talked about Pietrangelo being injured off the top. So McNabb getting extended looks there with the Vegas Golden Knights. Again, you have guys playing in bigger roles and bigger opportunities. I think it's worth taking a look at those guys, even when we're talking about postseason. And then especially DFS, right? You know, if guy's out and guy number two comes in, obviously the role is bigger there. The assignment is bigger there. And so I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And you look, and again, a non-playoff participant in New York Islanders, they're getting Brian Pulock's playing very well for them right now. And he's healthy. He has had a bit of an up and down season in that regard. Actually, the last couple of seasons for what it's worth. But he possesses that big shot, AJ, featured on some of the power play looks that the Islanders do get. He produced 11 shots on goal, nine blocks and four hits, along with 2 points. So Philly, a stat sheet filler for sure, and a veteran as well. Nikita Zadorov for Vancouver. We talked about the Canucks being a top-level team in this league, and Zadorov had some bite on the back end, but he also chipped in with two goals last week. Not expecting him to be a goal scorer all year long, but he's going to log a lot of minutes. He logged as many as 18. Sorry, on an average last week, and produced 29 fantasy points. So a lot of that's due to his physicality as well, with the six hits and eight block shots. You can count on that kind of 2-to-1 ratio per game in both of those categories for him to fill his stat sheet. Caden Gooley in Montreal, maybe similarly cast down the road, but he's learning by trial by fire here in the Canadian circumstances. Not one of the better teams in the league, but he's averaged 22 and a half minutes a game last week, only owned in 7% of leagues, but he did produce 2 goals and 2 helpers. So, you know, he's getting some offensive zone starts there, AJ. Not a big shot on goal guy. He scored on both of the ones that he took last week, oddly enough, but it just shows you he has some offensive chops here, so don't overlook him if you're looking for an opportunity to have a scoring total from your defensive position. We talked about the Carolina Hurricanes, your favorite to come out of the Metro Division. Jacob Slavin is a veteran defenseman there who has been toiling steadily all season long, only 34% owned, but he's a guy who gets a lot of playing time, averaging over 20 minutes a game, produced 3 points himself on the week. So a pretty safe option if you're looking to insulate your defense and get a quality veteran. He fits the bill there.
Well, I'll take us from there, and we'll just roll into the available netminders. So we're talking guys that should be have decent chances of being available in your league. And again, top of the list, Lucas Dostal for Anaheim. Gibson was dealing with a bit of an injury there for a little while, so Dostal getting some extended look. I think, you know, the fact is Gibson is back and is available. It looks like it was a personal issue that kept him out. But Gibson's also been struggling. He's given up 6 goals in 3 of his last 4 outings. He's lost all 4 of those contests. And him and Dostal had been splitting the workload before Gibson had that personal issue, whatever that was, that kept him out of the lineup. So I do think Dostal has some value. I know it's on a lower team. Wins are going to be hard to come by. He's going to face a lot of rubber, but man, if you just need a body in the Nets, I think he's certainly an option there. Another name I will toss out there, Kaapo Kähkönen for New Jersey. Not going to get a ton of work. They've been going heavy Allen. It looks like it'll be Allen again tonight. But again, Kako is available. He did get a win, 36 save shutout performance for the Devils. They're obviously trying to do everything they can to get some victories. His value is up because he's on the Devils and not the Sharks, obviously. So there's definitely, I think, a couple guys worth taking a look at here. Paul, anybody that stands out to you on this available goalie list?
There's a bunch of names, AJ. This is such a critical time of the year, and you want to get as many goalie wins as possible. So a lot of guys making a good case for themselves in a 2-goalie setup, and you might not look at them as the number one guy with maybe 1 or 2 exceptions on this list. I'll cycle through a few of them. Kevin Lankinen with Nashville, I mentioned they might be the hottest team in the entire league. He's getting a bit of a share of the goalie situation in Nashville. Only appeared in 1 game last week, but allowed only 1 goal against. So you got to like that aspect. And sorry, he got a shutout. What am I saying? So they're playing a strong defensive style, and the goalies are being well insulated there. So you could do worse than get a guy on the hottest team in hockey right now in Lankinen. And David Rittich is a guy that I have a lot of time for, as our listeners know. He, too, receded for a shutout, a 31-save job for Los Angeles. They seem to have righted themselves in the last week or so, and Rittich has been a key part of that in a 2-goalie setup, so he's going to get his share of the net there. Caden Primo, and what amounts now to a 2-goalie system in Montreal, finally, you're going to see both of these guys, him and Montembeau, get a lot of starts, and they're going back and forth between these two. Maybe a slight edge to Montembeau of late, but he did get a total of 36 saves last week in the game that he played, and it was a victory. So good for him. And then Anthony Stolarz is getting more starts than I was expecting, but maybe they're trying to keep Bobrovsky fresh down the stretch. Stolarz had a couple of wins last week, and again, he got another one this week. So a pretty safe pick there when you're talking about one of the top teams in the league, and you can throw him in when he's a spot, even if he was a spot starter, that's good value to you. And same can be said in St. Louis. Joel Hofer is a guy that is solidly behind Jordan Binnington in the pecking order there. Binnington with the lion's share of the net mining, but Hofer is getting a few more looks now that it looks like St. Louis is going to finish up the track a little bit. And I want to land on Ilya Samsonov, AJ, in Toronto. He has played extremely well since the calendar turned to 2024 and getting a lot of reps because Joseph Woll just couldn't seem to stay healthy for a long stretch. And so he was the goalie of record in a surge that the Leafs put the Leafs in a comfortable spot, really, in the Atlantic Division in the second half of the season, playing very steadily. But AJ, I bring his name up because he's going to be one of a couple, only a couple of goalies in free agency next year that are available. And I wonder what kind of a value you might assign to a possible contract with him. I'm trying to figure that out too, because I play a fun little game with myself, trying to look at the salary cap projections for the Leafs and a couple other teams going into next year. Now, Samsonov has a $3.5 million cap hit this year. I'll ask you, has he done enough to get a raise? And if so, what might that contract look like to you?
I definitely think he's going to get a raise here. You know, you look at kind of comparables, you know, guys that have dealt with injuries, some inconsistencies, and I would immediately point to Tristan Jarry, who's up around $5 million. I think that's certainly fair. The problem with projecting that, I think, this year is that there's more money available and there's goalies get overpaid for. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it go higher than that. But I do think $5 million is certainly a decent landing spot for him heading into you know, the offseason.
If I extend that discussion and tell you that Cam Talbot is the only other quasi-starting goalie that projects to be a free agent, that might change your view a little bit. But I think $5 million should be a ceiling for Samsonov's deal. He hasn't done enough to tell me he's an elite goalie, but he has shown me enough to tell me he is at least an average goalie. And that's the Leafs' dilemma, because they, of course, are cash-strapped at the salary cap level once again heading into this offseason. So that is going to be a compelling situation in Toronto that I'll keep my eye on with some interest. But I wonder if our listeners would weigh in on what they think could happen in that specific situation. I'll wind up my thoughts on the goalies, AJ, with a mention of Laurent Brossoit. Winnipeg is another top team. You wonder if they're kind of giving up the ghost a little bit with their chase for the division crown. We mentioned they fell off a little bit, so you wonder if they're going to pull back the reins on Connor Hellebuyck, who is, again, probably one of the busiest goalies in hockey, maybe the number one guy in terms of appearances, and they want him to be well-rested because he's central to any possibility of playoff success. What say you about Laurent Brossoit's expected ice time the rest of the way?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that assessment. Just looking at it, Hellebuyck is tied with Sorokin for third here. You've got Georgiev and Saros ahead of both of them. Georgiev, Saros at 56, and then Sorokin and Hellebuyck both at 52. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them scale it back, but it's that fine line, right? Like, Hellebuyck is a workhorse netminder. This is a guy that thrives on playing, you know, every night, quote unquote. So I think you'll see he's not going to want to take too many nights off. So they have to balance that with, you know, letting him be in a rhythm, going with that, but also getting some rest. But I do think overall, you're probably right. We'll see a little bit more Brossoit down the stretch than we have thus far.
And further to your note here, it says Sheldon Keefe just talked about to the Leaf Press saying that Morgan Rielly and Joel Edmondson are day-to-day, and Rielly hasn't really been ruled out fully for tonight's game, but he says he does not expect Edmondson to play this week, as you just said. So, and he also said that Mitch Marner has been upgraded to day-to-day, progressing well as per the coach. So at least things are starting to look on the up and up, but in goal, you should expect Joseph Woll to be the netminder of record this evening.
That has to be one of the greatest quotes of all time in terms of covering this for our listeners out there, that Keefe said he was day to day from being day to day. That was just, it was like, oh my God, just, is he week to week or is he day to day? What do you got? But Sheldon Keefe running right down the middle of that, but
it's so helpful. So helpful,
yes,
right?
Yep.
AJ, with that said, we're going to take our break. You're listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. And AJ and I will be back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Back right after these messages. All right, we're back, and we're going to cycle through some injury news that is critical at the late stages of this regular season for your fantasy aspirations, as you are in the playoffs, we suggested earlier. And AJ, why don't you begin with a few of the stories that should be shared today?
Yeah, so a couple ones right off the top that we already have news on this morning. Jake Walman will be out for another game. Originally, they had thought maybe he would play today. He won't be in the lineup. For Detroit, Petrie actually will play tonight. There was some concern about his availability. John Gibson was previously reported as being out with an illness. It turns out that was just a personal issue, and so he's back and available. So those are kind of minor ones. We talked about all the Leafs except for Ilya Samsonov. He won't dress tonight. They are expecting him to practice tomorrow, so he should be back between the pipes sooner rather than later for your Leafs there. And then a couple more, again, from this morning. Alexander Barkov will be in action tonight. Same with Gustav Forsling. Both of those guys returning after multiple missed games. Barkov, obviously, the bigger name there as he'll slot into his first-line center role for the Florida Panthers. On the bad side for Florida, they will have to be without Aaron Ekblad for at least one more game. It sounds like he's itching to get back in the lineup, but they are going to hold him out just a little bit longer. And one more thing to add on the Barkov note, looks like they're going to shuffle things around. Instead of having him go with Sam Reinhart, they're going to keep Reinhart and Anton Liddell together on that second line. And so they're making up a new first line of Evan Rodriguez, Alexander Barkov, and Vladimir Tarasenko. So a new line coming together for the Panthers that keeps Sam Bennett and Matthew Tkachuk together with Carter Verhaeghe. So definitely want to tell you, if you're building out DFS lineups or if you're looking at your season-long lineups, head over to rotowire.com, check out those depth charts, because things are looking decidedly different for the Panthers tonight.
AJ, we also mentioned that Tampa's really closed the gap on the Maple Leafs for that chase for third place. And they're going to be doing it to start this week without Victor Hedman and Braden Point, two central figures on this team. Hedman is dealing with a lower body injury. He missed Sunday's game, still considered only day-to-day, but he's the linchpin clearly on the blue line, and they're already without Sergachev, so that's a big hole offensively and defensively on the Tampa blue line at the moment. And Braden Point, I don't have to tell our listeners too much about him. He's been working with Nikita Kucherov, who's at the top of the scoring list in the NHL, so that riding shotgun with him is a prime position, and it'll be ceded to somebody else because Braden Point looks to be a day-to-day as well, dealing with an upper body injury, so two tough absences for Tampa at a critical stage in the season and impacting a lot of fantasy teams as well. I mentioned Alex Pietrangelo added to the lengthy Vegas injury list, and not a good time to have that happen. They want to have their power play linchpin active, but that gives Shea Theodore a chance to get some run running the power play without Pietrangelo there. He'll get more minutes in that regard, so it could spike his value as well. You mentioned Tom Wilson serving the final four games of the six-game suspension. When active, this guy's been a real factor for this team, so that's a tough blow for Washington as they try to race for a final playoff spot in the Metro Division. Any other thoughts, AJ?
I mean, the Washington's 2-0 without Wilson in the lineup, so maybe it's better if he's not. They've got 10 goals over those two games. So
another name, AJ, that was on this injured list that you look at with a Spockian eye, Evander Kane, not really injured, but he was sat out on Sunday for a coach's decision. And I don't know the details, but it looks like he's running out of runway here in terms of messing up another opportunity. He's bounced around the league and run afoul of team management before in other locales. This could be the end of the line for him in Edmonton if it proceeds along this path some more. I don't know if you have any more insights there, but we've seen this act before out of Evander Kane. Obviously, a very talented player, but just as obviously, a tough guy to manage.
Yeah, no added info, no updates yet on whether or not he'll be back in the lineup tonight. I can't imagine they keep him out that long unless whatever he did, whether it was missing a meeting or something, was particularly egregious. I have to imagine he'll play again tonight, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, but keep an eye on that circumstance because, as I say, I've heard little whispers that there are some issues afoot there. Final thoughts on the injured list with Minnesota being impacted by two key losses. Jonas Brodin missed the last two games with a lower body injury. Could show up later this week, so don't discount him just yet for too long. And Joel Eriksson-Ek, one of the top centers in the depth chart over there too, he's missed five games with a lower body injury so far. I don't know if you've seen any more word than in terms of how long he's going to be out, but that's been a critical omission from the Wild's lineup as well.
Yeah, I mean, not going to be a huge loss for them because they weren't going to make the playoffs anyway. But obviously, you know, there was some indication that he might have played Saturday, so I would imagine he's pretty close. They've actually got some extra time off during this stretch right now. So they played Saturday, and they don't play again till Thursday. So for me, that would seem to indicate if he was maybe close to playing Saturday and didn't, that I would expect he'll be back on Thursday. But none of that is official. That's just my speculation based off, what we saw heading into Saturday's game.
Okay, partner, we're going to switch it over to the DFS strategy portion of our show where you and I produce lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. And we look at Tuesday's slate of games, a 12-game set. And I wonder how your lineup looks on the DraftKings side of things.
Well, I took a slightly different approach here, Paul. I know a lot of times, and I think this applies to both of us, we try not to go too high and, you know, leave ourselves with minimal lineup flexibility. We try and find kind of middle of the road so that nobody's too high, nobody's too low. But I punted on that decision tonight, and it all started at my center. The matchup's just too good. I went with Nathan MacKinnon. He's 10.5 tonight. Huge price tag, but Colorado at home against Montreal. It's hard not to get some shares of Colorado here. And there's certainly ways to do it cheaper than that. But also, you know, MacKinnon at home means points. That's just,
yep.
It's just the way it works. MacKinnon playing at home. Not that he doesn't score on the road either. He does that too. But I think he's just too good. Not to get him in the lineup. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's on a ridiculous 18-game point streak with 12 goals, 25 assists over that stretch, 11 power play points. The shot total, 106 shots over 18 games. So that's over five a game. I don't know how you keep this guy out of your lineup, but it does make for some tough decisions the rest of the way. And again, that starts with my other center here. I'm going to go with Sam Steele, fourth line role for Dallas, comes in at just a meager 2,600. The one encouraging thing is he's got two shots in each of his last four games, and Dallas is playing the Sharks. That's a good opportunity for them to maybe have some guys who haven't normally been scoring to pick up some points. Having said that, I saved a little bit of money for the wing spot, and I paid up for Jake Guentzel, 7,500. Like I said, he's been absolutely lighting it up in Carolina. The numbers have been, you know, just fantastic there. Let's see, we've got 12 points in the last seven games, four power play assists. And what I like about this one too, Guentzel's coming back to Pittsburgh tonight. So he's going to want to put on a show for those fans as always, even if it does mean a potential Pittsburgh loss here. But I love Guentzel playing back in Pittsburgh tonight, 7,500, a price tag, well worth it. I found some value here in Danton Heinen at 3,300. This is an lineup kind of choice. He had been filling a top six role here. That could change, but we'll have to wait and see how that shakes out. James Van Riemsdyk had been back in the lineup, so we'll see. But Heinen at 3,300, a decent value for a guy that had been getting some top six looks. I also went with Kaapo Kakko from the Rangers. They're at home against Philadelphia. He's playing on a third line with Alex Wennberg. So a good assignment there for him. I'll jump straight to the utility spot. Mason Marchment, 4,200, going back to Dallas for, you know, low cost. He's playing with Duchesne and Sagan in the utility spot there, in the second line role, again, up against San Jose. Defensively, I went back to that high-low plan. We're going to spend up for Cale Makar at 8,300. Again, Colorado playing at home. Don't need to say much more about that. My other defenseman, 2,500 for Zach Jones for the Rangers. This is absolutely 100% a punt, but the Rangers have a good matchup at home. Right now, we've have them penciled in playing on a pairing with Adam Fox, so possible to pick up an assist there while on the ice with Fox. And then in the Nets, I went to Jake Ottinger for Dallas, 8,400 the price tag. He's, again, you're playing the Sharks. You got to at least think about it. Colorado would be another option for you if you wanted to go with Georgiev tonight. But I went with Ottinger here. So a lot of high-low in this lineup. It's definitely more of a GPP lineup than a cash game lineup because of that. But I think there's some decent chance to get some points out of that group there.
AJ, I stuck to my plan. So it's an interesting contrast. You went and spent some big money on McKinnon. I avoided that because I found value at the center position, quite frankly. That makes some sense to me. And I kept my lineup a little more balanced, as is my usual take. And I'll start through with a discussion. We only had one player in common again, so that's also an interesting outcome. I went with Connor Bedard of Chicago. He has a nice matchup against Calgary this evening. $7,800 his price tag. All he's done in the last seven games, but he has produced 12 points. So I'll take that hot stick against a Calgary team that's going to be challenged in the net because they're without their top starters in that regard. So an opportunity for the young superstar to feast there is what I see. And I pair him with Rupe Hintz. Again, this is where I go against something that I look for when I prepare these lineups. He's a guy that hasn't really been doing much offensively in terms of scoring. One assist in his last seven games, but I am looking for a breakout against San Jose, and I'm heartened by the fact that he has poured 23 shots on goal, so that's better than three a game, if I do the quick math correctly there, for a guy who's their first-line center, not only on the regular shift, but on the power play, he'll get a lot of reps there too, so could have multiple opportunities and multiple offensive zone starts to get off the schneid a little bit. Then I move over to the wing, and I find a couple of guys who are valuable enough in their circumstances against the projected opponents to make me go there. Jared McCann for Seattle. Both you and I cringe a little bit when we see this guy's name on the Seattle roster, having left Pittsburgh and slipped through the hands of the Leafs. And he's been productive for the Kraken once again this season. And he gets the matchup against Anaheim, hardly one of the league powers. He's a second-line winger, first-line on the power play. He, too, is looking to bounce back from a bit of a slump most recently and is well-positioned here to do so after only 2 points in his last seven games. And you touched on Bobby McMahon. He's getting a first-line opportunity with the Maple Leafs, playing alongside Austin Matthews, and I'm shocked that the price tag is only $4,800, so I jumped all over that one against the Devils tonight. And all McMahon has done is play well enough to get a two-year extension on his contract. He got 4 points in the last three games, playing second line with some of the veterans on this club, so a good situation for him. Then I look for John Carlson on the blue line in Washington. We mentioned the surging Capitals. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, AJ. $6,100 is the price tag for this guy against Detroit, who's going the other way, and they're falling by the wayside in the playoff hunt after going 3-7 in their last 10. 5 points in his last five games tell me that Carlson is at or near the top of his game, and that Washington power play is really hitting right now, and you know that he's quarterback there. The other defenseman, another power play linchpin of note long time, is Brett Burns of Carolina. 8-1-1, their record for the Hurricanes. Burns, for his part, cost $5,300 in that matchup against Pittsburgh. Sadly, your Pens are running out the clock, it looks like, AJ. They're 2-6-2 in their last 10. And all Burns has done is go point per game in his last six starts. So a compelling matchup and a sensible one for that relatively low price tag for one of the longtime power play quarterback experts in the NHL. Then I'll go to the utility side of things, and I put a couple of veteran forwards in those slots. TJ Oshie, again, going back to that Washington matchup, comes in at only $5,100. You get him, and when he's healthy, he's productive. It's just that simple. He came back after two do not plays. He gets 2 points in his last game. He's playing first-line minutes, so that means time with Ovechkin, power play time as well, and they make magic together. They've done it for a couple of years now, and I look for Oshie to continue that against a struggling Detroit team. And I go back to the Leafs against New Jersey. This is the first time, AJ, in a few weeks that I've picked any Toronto players. I don't know if you noticed that, but I'm on Bertuzzi tonight for $4,600. Here's another guy playing on the other wing with Matthews. So while I didn't spend the big bucks to get the Leafs' number one center, I do pick both his wingmen, and I look for them to have a big night tonight. $4,600 for Bertuzzi, $4,800 for McMahon. That's less than the sum for Matthews, for heaven's sakes. And all Bertuzzi's done is go point per game in his last five games. He's getting a look on the top line, obviously, as I said, but playing power play on the second unit as well. So good situation for him. And then I agreed with you on the goaltending pick. And I recall, though, that Dallas has had trouble with San Jose earlier this season, AJ. And Ottinger played in both previous starts, winning one and losing one. So it's not a lock that he's going to beat this club. They seem to have given him a little bit of trouble, but how can you overlook the fact that it is such a lopsided matchup on paper and Dallas is heavily favored? And for his part, Ottinger seems to have his game in order. He goes into this game on a three-game win streak, allowing only six goals against. So there's our look in the DFS side of things, AJ, with our picks for FanDuel and DraftKings on the aforementioned 12-game slate. And it's good to have a lot of games to look forward to this evening. But before we sign off today, we got to do our usual look at the spotlight on RotoWire's resources. We talked last week about my league's function and the baseball side of things. I wonder if you have any other thoughts of what you might like to highlight for our listeners in terms of what other resources RotoWire has.
Well, I think I'll talk about today is March Madness, college basketball. Not sure if that gets as much coverage up there by you, Paul, but obviously it's a big deal down here. And so we had stuff going into the start of the tournament, and that's too late for that, for your brackets, which I'm sure are already busted. But if you're betting on college sports, we've got betting articles. If you're playing on sites like Prize Picks or Underdog, we've got tools for that as well. So a ton of college basketball content available for you to help with those betting options, if you're obviously somewhere where you can do that. So we'll definitely keep highlighting more of these tools here. We've got player props, projections. You can break down our projections versus where their line is at, that sort of thing. Articles written by our experts. And so just a ton of tools as we look ahead to Thursday and Friday and getting back at it. You'll see I've got my Marquette University hat on today. They are you know, one of the two teams here in Wisconsin that were in the tournament. Unfortunately, Wisconsin got bounced, but we still got Marquette, and we're hoping that they can take us all the way. At least for my financial sake, we are.
Very good. Well, good luck with that, AJ, and a fine way to close out this week's show. We want to thank our listeners for tuning into RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. The next time we get together, there'll be only 2 weeks left in the NHL's regular season, 2 weeks more or less, and we'll have an update on the division races, and it's going to be compelling right down to the wire. So I'm looking forward to that. But as always, we remind you that we're here to assist you with all things related to your enjoyment of fantasy hockey. So we encourage you, send your comments or questions on Twitter, where you can follow me, Paul Bruno, at Satsman22, and you can follow AJ. So long, everybody. Have a great week.